Hello, and welcome to September 2023 and more Flying Clubs radio editions. We're back in the studio after a pretty hectic summer flying season, as well as participating in many Flying Clubs events around the country. We're already planning our 2024 Flying Clubs outreach activities, and we'll publish our plans in the January 2024 edition of the Club Connector newsletter. Stay tuned. Steve, I recall you talking about hazardous attitudes as applied to Flying Clubs some time ago. So what's the scoop?
Hello, Drew and loyal listeners. Yes, indeed. What a year to date we've had. We're now up to 230 new Flying Clubs formed with our help and resources, and I've very much enjoyed meeting with Flying Club members nationwide, literally from Alabama to Wyoming. We still have a few months left in 2023, so keep an eye out for details about other Flying Club events, including two, hopefully in-person, workshops, where we will cover all there is to know about running successful Flying Clubs. Right then, to the topic at hand. The idea of hazardous attitudes for Flying Clubs came to me as I was writing the July 2023 edition of Question of the Month, entitled, What Does Good Standing Mean for Flying Clubs? The article got into serious details about a Flying Club's responsibility to its members and to various agencies, such as state business bureaus, airport operators, the FAA, and the IRS. The first item tackled in the article was follow the rules, organizational and operational behaviors. And that triggered an association with the five hazardous attitudes that we all learned and some of us teach as part of aeronautical decision making in private pilot ground school. I then pondered, do all five hazardous attitudes, those factors which interfere with the ability to make good decisions and exercise authority, do these apply to collectives such as Flying Clubs as well as to individuals? And after much chin scratching, I concluded that the answer is a resounding yes.
Interesting. Okay, so you're suggesting that those attitudes that can block our ability to make training and data-driven decisions are applicable to organizations as well as individuals. I sort of see that. Organizations are made up of individuals, but can be influenced by what you call pack behaviors, where people make decisions based upon the actions of others without even realizing it. Deep stuff. So let's get to some examples.
Right. But before we get started, it seems that pilots quickly relegate the five hazardous attitudes to psychobabble, and that's a big shame. Some really smart people at the FAA have distilled these dangerous human behavioral traits into something that we all can understand and do something about. I mean, be honest, every one of us exhibits these behaviors, but we need to be big enough and smart enough to admit to them and then face them down. Now, a long time ago, I realized that, amazingly, in the world of aviation, there was not an easy acronym to remember the five. So let's change that. The one that I use is IMAIR, I-M-A-I-R, impulsivity, macho, anti-authority, vulnerability, and resignation. I strongly suggest that all pilots treat IMAIR in the same way that we should all be treating PAVE, but as a very effective way to remind ourselves to double check that we are human and life between flights influences our behaviors and tolerances. We all know that attitudes get in the way of teenagers' common sense, so we would be wise to recognize and then mitigate attitudes that have been shown to kill us when in the air.
Wow. Okay. Point well made. So we all know the textbook examples of the five hazardous attitudes of pilots. What about sending that to Flying Clubs?
So yes, indeed. I'll eventually get to the point now. So let's take them one by one in the context of a Flying Club. Number one, impulsivity. We have to do something, anything. Perhaps this is a result of an incident or handling a belligerent member, but we get calls from clubs all the time who leapt before they looked. The classic antidote to this hazardous attitude is not so fast, follow the plan. Well, this is great advice if a plan is in place. So for the case of an individual, the idea is to be proficient enough to slow down and, based on training, think things through. I think the same idea applies to clubs. Ensure that a plan is in place. This should be thoroughly reviewed, regularly reviewed, and amended by like bylaws, a disaster recovery plan, and so on.
Yeah, good point, Steve. This gets to the heart of running a successful Flying Club. Have good rules, accept that they will change over time, but also stay on top of forward-looking strategic planning to help avoid situations that could result in impulsive actions. But it isn't possible to have a plan for every eventuality. How should a club handle a new-to-them situation?
Yeah, you're right. And rather than just continually add to an already bloated rulebook, we suggest using words like at the discretion of the board of directors. This suggests that the BOD needs to get together and work through the issue. This is what I call a plan for a plan. The plan requires that the board get together and think through the situation and then work towards a thoughtful resolution.
All right, one down. What's the next one?
So I'm working down the IMAIR list, so next up is Macho.
Oh, come on, Steve. We don't need to mess around with this one. I'll show you how to get things done.
Ah, good illustration, Drew. Thanks. Yeah, this one is basically about showing off. The standard remedy to this bravado attitude that often involves or introduces unnecessary risk is taking chances is foolish. Okay. But this goes for collectives such as flying clubs as well as individuals. What are some examples of taking chances in a flying club? Well, the board makes unilateral decisions that affect a club's longevity. Solution: involve the members on matters of existential importance, including aircraft acquisition. Disregarding maintenance and inspections. This is different than anti-authority, which would flat out ignore or resent rules. Disregarding maintenance may be the result of poor financial management and planning. And you can see the trap here. There's not enough money to pay for the maintenance unless people fly the plane. Now, this is taking chances, but with other people taking all the risk. Let's buy another airplane, which is bound to attract more members. Build it and they will come is a pretty risky strategy in real life.
Yeah, that last one's interesting. It's a sort of betting the farm type of all-in bravado. My club went about this completely differently and took months of work, meetings, and discussion until we first grew the membership on the promise of another plane and then, with the money in the bank, went on to do some plane shopping.
Yeah, exactly. Good solution there. So on to the next one, anti-authority. Don't tell me what to do. Solution, follow the rules. They're there for a reason. Let's be clear. This is blatantly choosing not to follow the rules rather than not actually knowing them. Although, to be honest, with so much information readily available, ignorance is no defense, especially when government agencies are involved. Now, I don't want to start a rant here, but I think I'm going to. But just look at a couple of examples of anti-authority that affects us on pretty much every flight. Just getting to the airport without being wiped out by some huge speeding truck is one thing. But then the ever-increasing creativity and selfishness in the traffic pattern is another. Cirrus 1234, 15 miles straight in, runway 29er, when everyone else is playing by the rules and keeping each other safe. Is it entitlement? Is it ignorance? Perhaps because of poor training? Is it don't tell me what to do? Either way, we will continue to have high potential for mid-air collisions when people choose to ignore the rules or revert to, it doesn't say that I can't do this. Oh, for goodness sake.
Wow, Steve, that was pretty good for not being a rant, but I do fully agree with you about the pattern. So what about examples of anti-authority that's related to flying clubs?
Okay, back on topic. Right. I pretty much covered the potential for clubs to go anti-authority in the July 2023 question of the month. What does being in good standing mean for flying clubs? The article is all about how clubs should, and decide not to, in some cases, follow the rules as set down by the FAA, airport management, IRS, and the often overlooked state's business bureaus. Over the years, we've seen many examples of this. And to be fair, many a time a new board just doesn't know that the rules exist. But again, ignorance really is no defense when the IRS and FAA are involved. We invite all board members, old and new, to read the Guide to Starting a Flying Club and other resources, including the Club Connect newsletter Question of the Month articles. An example? Well, there was that club that wanted our opinion about lying to the IRS when applying for tax exemption as a 501c3 charity. They certainly heard our opinion, but went ahead anyway. Why did they risk this? Well, on the chance that their state would not impose sales tax on the to-be-bought aeroplane. Again, for goodness sake. Another one? The big club that bullies its way through the rules regarding advertising flight training. Don't tell me what to do, we'll take our chances, was the club president, what the club president said to me. Needless to say, that club is not listed anymore on the AOPA Flying Club Finder.
All right, Steve, two more to go. Let's bring it on home.
Next is invulnerability. It won't happen to me. Solution, it can and it will, unless you do something to prevent it. We've seen many examples of clubs, particularly mature clubs with many of the original members, that simply isn't keeping up with the times. We've made it this far is really not a good strategy for the future. They are indeed vulnerable. What are these clubs doing to attract new members? Will new members actually want to join? What about the club aircraft? I mean, she may be called Dolly, but how does she present to new pilots brought up on glass cockpit simulators? No one and no one organization is invulnerable to rapidly changing economic and political times and to the teetering public opinion about everything they are not involved in. Never before have we seen so many experts who don't have a clue about what we do and why we do it, but have opinions anyway. So it's absolutely vital that a club faces its future head on. As we've said before, flying clubs should cater to their existing members, but must focus on new members. Otherwise, the club will not survive. Other things to consider? Perhaps term limits on board members to infuse new ideas and prevent a Politburo from dragging the club down for idealistic reasons. Be realistic about the club's equipment. Set fees and dues to 2023 levels. Subsidising flying will last only as long as the bank balance is positive. Plan, plan, and plan again, and then replan. There is a lot more information on the vulnerability of flying clubs in Club Connector articles. For example, is our club still viable? Our club is struggling. What options do we have to stay operational? And what can we do to ensure the longevity of our flying club? And finally, resignation. What's the use? We can't do anything. Solution. There are always ways forward. This is where the power of many should really provide a way forward. It's one thing for an individual to feel helpless, even when they're not, but there's just no place for this in a flying club. Again, it's usually older clubs with aging members which seem to fall into this trap. I don't think it's laziness as such, but perhaps people just get tired. And that, you know, 20-80 rule of involvement doesn't help matters. You know, the one where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Although in my book, claiming that other people don't do anything is pretty close to whining. Somebody should do something. Yeah, you, get active. Again, see Club Connector articles for ways out of this hole.
All right, well, that about covers the hazardous attitudes as applied to flying clubs. Let me summarize. Have good plans in place and be ready to change with the times. Don't take unnecessary risks. It's a club of equals. Involve them. Obey the rules. They are there for a reason. Set sensible and realistic club rules and fully enforce them. Nothing lasts forever. Clubs require nurturing and frequent injection of new blood to stay viable. Everyone in a club can and should make a difference. A club is not the Borg, but is a group of involved individuals, and that is the safety valve. It just takes one person to step up to say and do something. Well, that's all we have for today. So for now, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.